What really gets my dick hard is...
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast Radio. This is Clint Wells. All right, let's get this shit started. Never hear a noise somewhere in the cloud. I hear you call my name out loud. Now keep my ear to the ground. Always looking out for another way down. Away inside you from this bed. Right, you just heard a song that I wrote called Japan in My Heart. This edition of Metal Up Your Podcast Radio, it's going to be songs that I've written. I actually got a lot of requests to do this. For those of you who don't know, in addition to playing guitar, I'm also a songwriter. I have a publishing deal with a pub house called Rough Trade Music, and somehow, amazingly, I do this professionally. Now, most of the songs I write are for film and television or for to be pitched to country artists. You're not really going to hear many of those today. The songs that I wanted to play today are the songs I've written this year that are kind of just for me. They're songs I would write by myself, even if I never had a publishing deal or if no one ever heard any of them. These are the songs of my heart, if you will. I'm really proud of them. Some of them I co-wrote with some of my friends. I'll be talking kind of about how I wrote them and what all went into the process. So starting with Japan, a good friend of mine who drums in the country band I play, his name is Kevin. We planned an outside of work hang. We see each other every weekend. We play gigs and We had a weekend off, strangely, and he's got this cool studio up in the top of his house, and he's got his whole drum kit set up, and he had just gotten all these cool new mics and kind of gotten it all set up, and he invited me and the fiddle player, my friend Mark, just to come over and, you know, have some bourbon and sit in the studio and talk music. And I was waiting to go over there. I had some time, and I was playing an acoustic, and I essentially wrote the song Japan on the acoustic. I didn't have a lyric yet, but I kind of, sometimes these songs like fall out really quick, and I really quickly could see the whole thing, see the whole song. I think I did maybe a quick voice memo. So I got to Kevin's house, and I said, hey, you know, what might, we can totally just hang out and talk, but what might be fun is, like, you want to record a song? And he's super down for that. So our friend Mark engineered it, and we got him behind the kit. He plugged me into this little Yamaha, like, desktop amp that you just plug straight into your computer, like, via USB. And it's, I was just going to play that. I was playing this cool Les Paul Jr., and I just played this just for the, like, guide track. I was going to replace all this except for his drums. But I ended up liking the sound of that thing so much that that's actually the main guitar sound, is this, like, super solid state, non-cool, quote-unquote cool amp. So I got his drums. He sent them to me. I went back to my studio and put all the rest of the candy on it. I played everything else on it except the drums. And the lyric came to me real quick, too, and I don't really know what it's about. It's got a bunch of achy ex-girlfriend stuff. It's got a bunch of fun Tom Waits, the putting the Kiss makeup on. And then I love the J-A-P-A-N, be in my heart, like total Bay City Rollers. S-A-T-U-I-D-A-Y, night. I totally just stole it. J-A-P-A-N, be in my heart. Now, I don't know that Bay City Roller song. I just totally lifted that from one tiny scene, and so I married an axe murderer, which is probably next to Coming to America, my favorite comedy. So, anyway, that's how that song happened, and I shared it with a few friends, and they all really liked it a lot. It's got this cool punk rock thing, but it's also got this 80s jangle that I liked a lot. It's just that main guitar that I did at Kevin's straight down the center, and then these kind of two clean, chimey guitars on the left and right. And then, of course, bass, drums, vocal, and maybe a little organ or something. I don't remember. I never played these songs live, so I've been in the songwriting group with my friend Bob Schneider for about 8 years. You have to write a song a week. If you miss 2 weeks in a row, you're out of the group. And I've just accumulated, you know, I think I'm up to almost 600 songs now. Of course, they're not all good. They're not all great. But some of them, you know, like Japan that you just heard, I really like a lot. And but I never play them live. You know, I either send them off to my publisher or send them to a couple of friends. I don't ever play them. So some of these, I can't remember how I recorded them. But anyway, that was Japan. We're going to listen to it. What I'm trying to do is stagger these, like, more rocker ones and then more delicate ones. One of the muscles that I've gained from writing so many songs is you write 100 songs that are acoustic-y, sad bastard shit, and you're just so worn out from that that you, maybe I want to write kind of a punk song, maybe I want to write a dance song, and some of that's going to be represented in these 10 tunes. This next song is called Nothing Left But Roses, and it's another one that was written really fast. I didn't really know what it was about until after I could see the whole picture. I'm not really precious with lyrics. I just sort of, I sort of let it ride, and I sort of fall in love with phrasing and the color of words before I really know what they mean. And this was kind of like that. We'll dip into the tune, and then we'll maybe talk about some of the lyrics and how the song got recorded. So here's Nothing Left But Roses.
Summer turned to fall, and all the leaves have turned to dust. Picking up where we left off, like we're underneath a rusty nail. Sometimes I wait for the sun, but it never seems to come. It used to come so easily, like a needle pulling thread. Filled with broken seams, struggle to forget the past, and I get trapped inside the riddle of my mind. I cry. Trouble through all the years I tried to find and endure that's hopeless till there's nothing left but roses. Street alone, and everything looks gray. The color that I used to know has slowly faded away into a light that I am afraid I don't recognize. Well, I'm in trouble and I've been gone. Last fucked up, but what went wrong this time? Tired of counting the tears I cry. Trouble through all the years I tried to find and into all that's hopeless till there's nothing left but roses. It's a lonely road I travel on in the dark night of my soul. It's like I'm living inside a haunted house and I'm the only ghost. Life's just a ride and I'm trying to hold on. Crash landed till the roses lead me back to where I'm from. Lead me back to where I'm from. Trouble through all the years I tried to find and into all that's hopeless till there's nothing left but roses. Till there's nothing left but roses. Till there's nothing left but roses. Nothing left but roses.
Till there's nothing left but roses. So that song fell out. I had that sort of drony guitar thing, which I really loved. It really reminded me of this like Daniel Lanois thing. There's a Daniel Lanois record. If you guys don't know, he produced a lot of big U2 records and Peter Gabriel and Willie Nelson. He's known as a producer. He also makes these really great little ambient folk records. And he's got a record from 2003 called Shine. That almost every song on it, it's so good, it makes me want to just stop being a songwriter and, like, go to plumbing school and plumb forever. Which, no, I mean, that doesn't sound that bad. Plumbing sounds neat, actually. Anyway, so I kind of wanted to keep the drony aspect of it, so I just put that one kick that really never changes, and I made this, like, really ambient electric pad that just, and then I think I reversed it, so it's like this weird loop, and the whole song kind of sits on that like a bed. And the lyric came really fast, and the vocal came quick, and when I stepped back from it, I realized I'd sort of, without really knowing it, super, like, named all of my depression, which is something I've struggled with for a long time, most of my life, actually, and nothing crazy. I've never tried to kill myself or anything, at least not directly, and the song is about sort of naming those feelings so that you can sort of have more power over them. Because I feel like being able to just look at it baldly is one of the first steps to sort of overcoming it. So, you know, what's that lyric in the bridge? It's a lonely road I travel on in the dark night of my soul. It's like I'm living inside a haunted house and I'm the only ghost. Life's just a ride, but I'm trying to hold on. Crash landed till the roses lead me back to where I'm from. So this idea that at the bottom of all of that is something beautiful, like this idea, holding on to, like, it's like in Schindler's List, like the one bit of color is that jacket. Like, there's even a line in one of the verses about, I'm walking down the street alone and everything looks gray. The color that I used to know has slowly faded away into a light that I no longer recognize. So the roses are like this one red thing that's beautiful and colorful in a world that feels kind of gray. For those of you who struggle with some of those feelings, that might sound familiar. Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Maybe it's different for everyone. But that's kind of where I landed on that. Okay, before we get too bummed out. this next song is called Best Love. I wrote it with my friend Mike Meadows, who plays guitar for Taylor Swift, and my other friend Derek Barr, who he plays guitar with me with Rodney Atkins. And we get together every few months and try to bang out some songs. And we were listening to Prisoner by Ryan Adams, and sort of just in awe of how he does that whole 80s nostalgia thing, but it still sounds kind of modern. And how great he is with counter melody. You could tell he's listened to a lot of The Smiths and The Cure, real big on counter melodies. I don't think we landed it, but that was what was hovering around our heads when we wrote this song. I'm really proud of it. It's called Best Love. Let's check it out.
Still out here searching for you, like I'm looking for a light in the dark. I don't care if it was true.
That's Mike doing those backgrounds. We originally wrote the song as Living Your Best Love. We liked the idea of like that sounded different and an interesting angle. What I did with the song, and this is a theme a little bit with some of my co-writes, is we got the song kind of burned down and we were proud of it. I sent it off and I made this. We didn't go to a studio or anything. I made everything you hear today, I made in my home studio, HQ2, for those of you who know what that is. So we made the demo, and we got Mike to sing it. Mike's got a really beautiful voice. Sounds kind of like Chris Isaak. He actually got a voice I'm really jealous of. We cut it. He sent it to his publisher. I sent it to mine. Everyone loved it, blah, blah, blah. And I just sort of, it's really rare that I sort of keep turning these over. I usually like to be done with a song. Like, it's done, it's done. I'm going to write another one tomorrow. I don't have time to rethink all this shit. But this one really stuck with me, and I ended up rewriting it to I'm giving the best love that I know how. And the character in the song, which is kind of me and maybe kind of not, I don't really know, I see as really pathetic. And this dude is just kind of love sick and kind of trying to justify being an idiot. I'm a little bit broken, but that's how you know when you're giving your best love. Like, my thought when I hear it is like, a little bit broken. Dude, you're a goddamn mess. I took you to the edge of the earth and I tried to fill your empty space. God, it's like I'm stuck in reverse. Is it always going to be this way? It's like, dude, grow up. But I like pathetic songs. One of my favorite songs of all time is Boys of Summer by Don Henley, where I think what he's talking about is he met this chick and then summer comes around and she's like, oh, I'm going to fuck all these other dudes. And he's like, well, I'll still be here after the boys of summer have gone. And it's like, whoa, dude, why don't you love or respect yourself? Just go find someone who likes you. And he's like, nah, I'm going to stay with, that's kind of where this best love stuff comes from. I love it though. I was really proud of the sounds. There's like a big synth in there. I listened to some of the Ryan Adams 80s stuff, like some of these really short little EPs he put out a few years ago. And it's just these like old Juno synth stuff. And you just crank them in the mix to higher, like put them where you think they should go and then go like 6 dB higher. And so they just sort of overwhelm it and give it a lot of character, in my opinion. All right, coming up next, when we got pregnant, and by we, I definitely mean my wife, my involvement in our pregnancy was I had a very brief role in that. I decided that I wanted to write a Christmas song for my daughter every year. You know, that way when she's like 17, 18, before she leaves me forever, I can give her this gift of like, you know, a double LP, if you will, of Christmas songs. And I've been writing them. The first one was called Merry Christmas Nova. Then I wrote one called Wake Up, It's Christmas. And they're all really sweet. They've got some darkness in them. Merry Christmas Nova is about me being on the road during the holidays. Wake Up, It's Christmas is about me being afraid of her being hurt in the future. And then I try to like sprinkle in Christmassy stuff. Now this year's the one for 2017, I wrote a song called Wherever You Go, That's Where I'll Be. And, it's another kind of travel-y song, and it deals a lot with time. I don't know if you guys for those of you who are parents, if you're not a parent, you probably think this is schlocky, sensitive bullshit. But for those of you who are parents, you've seen that movie Boyhood, that Richard Linklater film that was like 3 years. It took him, it's 3 hours long, but it took him like 10 years to make, and it's the actual actors growing up. It's just a movie where you just see time unfold, and I see that in my daughter. She's about to turn 4, and already I see how much has happened and changed, and I swear to God, it feels like it was fucking yesterday. And so there's a lot of allusions to time passing and the idea of me being gone, which I'm gone a lot. And so it's in the title, but the idea is like, wherever you go, that's where I'll be. And there's a lot in the song of sort of lamenting not really remembering who I was before her, which is cool. Like, I can't remember who I was before you. You made me want to be a better man. But that's also kind of a sad thing. It makes me sad. So anyway, let's dip in. Here's my daughter's Christmas song, Wherever You Go, That's Where I'll Be. Check it out.
Well, another year has passed, another trip around the star. Sleigh bells ring in the corner of my mind.
Wherever you go, that's where I'll be for my sweet little girl, Nova. I hope she digs that stuff. I'm not a super sentimental person. I'm bad at remembering birthdays and gifts. But that is something I'm really looking forward to giving her later. My friend Mark Evitz, who plays fiddle in the band with Rodney, he did all those strings. He came over one day, and he always plays such gorgeous shit on my songs. That bridge, go to sleep now and dream. All my love is yours to keep. Like angels in the snow, my halo's getting cold. I didn't even know what those chords were. I was like trying to explain to Mark, like, you know, he's like, how does the song go? I didn't have a chart or anything. It's like, and when it, because that song is in a weird tuning. I couldn't even tell you what it is. I just tuned all the strings to where it made sense. And then when I went up for that chord, I have no idea what it was. And so once he figured out, he's like, oh, that's a B flat diminished, whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. Whatever, homie. Oh, got a little choked up listening to that just now. For those of you at home, I listen to these in real time with you. I'm not just like editing at all. I mean, I am editing it, but kind of burning it down with you so I can stay on the emotional journey. For some reason, there's a Journey deep cut that goes, I'll be all right without you, 'cause it's someone else I keep telling myself. I don't know why I know that chorus. I have almost no memory of hearing it on the radio. I don't play it in my car or in the shower. Like, everyone knows, wheel in the sky keeps on turning. Everyone knows all their hits, but that song, I always sing that chorus in my, I'll be all right without you. And I don't know why I know it. It'd be a hell of a compliment if one day someone somewhere could say that about one of my songs. Now, changing gears a little bit, some of you have heard my Lunar Satan jams, my satanic space odyssey metal project. Long before that, I was making a rock and roll record. Like I said, in the song game, you just write a, you know, if you only write in the song game, which I don't do, I write also in addition to it, that's 52 songs a year. So I'm averaging around 75 to 100 songs a year, and I went through a whole phase where I wrote about 25, 30 rock songs, because I was going to make a rock and roll record. And it was fun. I wrote this song that I'm about to play for you now called Big Gun, and no, it's not the AC/DC song heavily featured on the Last Action Hero soundtrack, which, by the way, one of my favorite movies of all fucking time. Last Action Hero, the meta masterpiece, misunderstood by audiences, marketed all wrong. They marketed it as like an Arnold Schwarzenegger action film. It is not that. It is a mind fuck. Super smart, a super original take on the action film. Last Action Hero, it's like 95. But AC/DC had that, Big Gun, you're number one. Anyway, this is not that. I wrote the song called Big Gun because I don't like guns very much. I'm not one of those people. We own a gun, all right, before you flip out and shit at work or wherever you are. I'm just not a big fan. They scare me, and I have concerns about the nature of them in America. We own 4% of the population, and we own almost half of all guns. That worries me. Kids are being killed in schools and, you know, whatnot. That worries me. Anyway, so I have this idea called Big Gun. It's not even really about guns. It's more about the idea of guns being an extension of being a bully. And I was actually thinking more about my gay friends more than anything. And I was thinking about people who use religion. And so the idea in the chorus is big man, big mouth, big gun, big truck. You got a lot of big things, big boy, but none of it's love. And that was sort of the jumping off point. I wrote this bitchin' riff, well, what I thought was a bitchin' riff, and I can't even play it and sing it at the same time. This is me on everything. Anyway, maybe we'll talk about it again in a minute. I'm going to let the song speak for itself. Here's a rocker called Big Gun. Your megaphone ain't Believe it or not, I did not write that song about a current presidential administration. I think it applies to both sides in some cases, you know. It's a false equivalency in my opinion. They're not equally evil in my opinion, but you know, there's problems everywhere. We got problems. Don't be the problem. Be the solution. Which is easy for me to say. Well, I wrote a song about it. Oh boy. That's going to get those kids out of those cages. Sorry. Super dark times. Super dark times. Anyway, that's Big Gun. I thought it was fun. Good little rocker. Little political message. And I got to drop the F-bomb a few times. Now, I don't have a philosophy about profanity in my music. Sometimes a song's asking for something. It's asking for shit. And sometimes the song feels kind of bigger than what my priorities are. I know that sounds stupid, but it really is kind of like that. And I do an exercise a lot, which is called dummy lyrics. I do it when I write by myself, which I wrote that one by myself. I do it when I have people in my studio, my writing rooms. The idea of just start singing. If we kind of know what the melody is, just start singing, because there's subconsciously all these cool little nuggets come out. Or even just the color or like the turn of a phrase will be interesting and you won't even know what you're saying. And you sort of just use that as a map and turn it into a narrative or a lyric. And that is another song that came really fast, Big Gun. So anyway, moving right along. I don't know if there's anything else to really expound on with Big Gun. I've always sort of fantasized about putting a little band together and playing that song live. But I don't even know if I could sing it live. My range is very small and, you know, I don't have a lot of muscle for live. I've never played these goddamn songs live, so I don't know. The next song is a cool little moody piece. It's called Marionette. Let's just listen to it. You guys probably don't want to hear me talk about every goddamn song I play. Let's just check this out. It's called Marionette.
There's nothing in my arms, no, my hands are empty again. So fill them up with stars. I wanna hold the light for as long as I can. Say something you're gonna regret before you go pulling everything apart. You're marionette, you got someone above you pulling the strings on your paper heart. But there's nothing in my arms.
Sometimes you find yourself in a relationship where the other person's just done with it and they want to blow it up, and it's really confusing and painful because you don't really see it that way. And the imagery of the song is like this person's basically saying, you know, put the weapon down or shit's going to get messy. And you're going, I don't have any weapons. What are you talking about? And they're just determined to blow it up. So definitely autobiographical. But moving right along here from that little dark poetry. But that song started, I was touring with Bob Schneider, and God, when you're doing sound checks every fucking day, you know, you just get so bored of playing stuff. And so I had that arpeggiated chord thing. I don't have a guitar laying around right now. That do 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 do. Anyway, I had that and I thought, ooh, that's cool. It was like this weird G chord, and then I would just lower the root to this F sharp, and it made this cool dissonant major 7-y thing. Song sort of fell out of it. I love the track to it too, like all these really ominous synths, and I love that drum stuff. This next song is about my grandfather, who passed away a few years ago. He was the only other musical person in my family. He wasn't a great guitar player, but he collected a lot of guitars, and I sort of grew up. I was born in Montgomery. My parents divorced when I was 2, and my mom moved to Birmingham. So I spent, until I was 16 or 17, every other weekend going to Montgomery to visit, you know, that side of the family. And I grew up in my grandfather's house seeing all these beautiful, he collected all these old Gibsons and Martin acoustic guitars, really valuable, cool guitars. And somehow, amazingly, just sort of like left them all out. He had like a whole room with like, where like 50 of them were cased up, but then he would leave like 4 or 5 around the house. And we were always pretty much told, don't ever fucking touch them. But they were there and we were respectful. So I just always loved the guitar, and the image of the guitar was just always with me. And I, of course, loved music at a young age. So anyway, I started playing when I was 12 or 13, and he gave me my first like little shitty electric guitar, and he gave me my first real shitty acoustic guitar. And that's this next song is going to deal with that first acoustic guitar, but I wanted to tell this one story to contextualize my relationship with my grandfather. He was not a perfect dude, and I think he was really hard on my dad and really hard on his wife, my grandmother, but he was always really sweet to me, and my relationship with my dad hasn't been and isn't great. And I don't know if he was trying to make up for it or whatever, but he was always very, very sweet to my sister and I. Very doting and kind and beautiful. And that's how I remember him. And when I was 17 or 18, I'd started playing music professionally and starting to kind of tour regionally. And I was working in a guitar store, and I'd saved up like $1,500 or something. And I drove to Montgomery, and I called him. I said, hey, I want to come buy a guitar from you. And I've got money. Some people in my family kind of took advantage of my grandfather. He was pretty wealthy. You'd never know it. I mean, he lived like a goddamn bum, but pretty wealthy dude, pretty smart, a lot of real estate stuff. And some people in my family sort of took advantage of that through the years. And I always, thankfully, that was always like a lesson to me, like, gross, I'm never going to be like that. So, 17, I saved up about $1,500, and I said, hey, I want to buy one of your guitars. I'm not asking you to give it to me. I wouldn't mind a family discount, but I got $1,500. Can I buy one of your guitars? And he said, go pick one out. So, I wanted, for those of you who know me, I've got this, like, jumbo, this blonde J200, this Gibson J200 that I've had since he gave it to me when I was 17. I'm almost 35 now. And I picked that one out, and I said, you know, because $1,500, the guitar's worth like $3,800. I said, I got $1,500, can I have this one? He, of course, said yes, and I visited with him for a while, and when I was getting in my car, backing out of the driveway to drive back to Birmingham, he was running down the driveway and kind of waving at me to stop, and I stopped and rolled my window down, and he gave me a kiss, and he shook my hand and gave me my money back. So... that's the kind of dude he was, and I grew up with him. He was a big country music fan. He taught me about Hank Williams, and I grew up listening to the Grand Ole Opry on the radio with him in this old garage, or we'd watch it on TV, and it was cool, because like, that was always quiet time, but it felt intimate with him. Like, I felt like we were sharing something. And I, of course, was interested in music. It didn't feel like boring old people playing old people music to me. I thought it was kinetic and fascinating. And as I started to play professionally, he was always really proud. And I would check in with him, and I would go on tour, and I would go play in Europe, and I would go play for the troops in Africa and Bahrain, and I always took that acoustic with me. And I would tell him, you know, like, that guitar you gave me has been all over the goddamn world, you know? And I'd always sort of secretly hoped that when I played the Opry for the first time that he'd be able to come, you know, like get him tickets and do the whole thing. He'd never been, and it meant a lot to him. And well, he passed away a few years ago, and just by happenstance, I didn't play the Opry for the first time until about 3 months ago with this guy, Rodney Atkins, that I work with. And not to be overdramatic, but it was like a bummer that like he couldn't be there, and he would have been so proud and all, you know, all that stuff. And I had a co-write one day that got canceled, which for any of you who write professionally, when co-writes get canceled, part of you is bummed, and then part of you is like, yippee! free day or whatever, which for me is not a free day. I'm obsessed with working. I'm a workaholic. So for me, it was like an opportunity to either mix songs I was working on or work on my Metallica covers EP or, you know, redo my pedal board or whatever. And I was laying in bed. I just gotten the text, hey, I'm not gonna be able to make it today. Really sorry. And I was like, oh, maybe I can sleep for another hour. And the idea came to my head. I was thinking about my grandfather, and the title came to my head, which is called No One at the Opry But You and Me. And it's basically about the feeling I had when I was playing the Opry, which for those of you who don't know, the Grand Ole Opry is a huge rite of passage in Nashville. And it's historic, and there's a lot. You could just Google the Grand Ole Opry. Every very important people made their debuts there and all this stuff. And when I was playing it, it was such a surreal experience. It's a very intense gig because you're stacked on a show with maybe four or five other people and you don't really have a sound check. It's really quick. They're all pros. They get you dialed up real fast, but it's not a very precious gig. I mean, it's like rough and ready. You gotta be ready to fucking rock. And they played on the radio and sometimes they televise it. Anyway, we did three songs, and while we were doing it, I just closed my eyes and just for a minute, I felt like I was the only one there. You know what I mean? And, so I had this idea of writing a song called No One at the Opry But You and Me. And, I mean, this was the kind of the deal where, like, tears were hitting the fucking page while I was writing it. And the first verse is about me being a kid, and he gave me that first kind of shitty beater guitar. And then the second verse is me in my 20s when I started to kind of tour. I was slumming it in clubs and vans. And then the third verse is kind of where I'm at now, which I'm not claiming to be Led Zeppelin or anything, but, you know, have made a decent living out of making music, and all of it really is because of him. And so anyway, it's called No One at the Opry But You and Me, and this one's for my grandfather, so here it is.
I was a boy in Montgomery, Alabama, when my granddaddy gave me my first six-string guitar. It was beat up good, but to me it was a treasure. And I'd walk around singing songs in the neighborhood. He said, son, well, a guitar, it's like magic, and it'll take you anywhere, anywhere you wanna go. Most times I just wanted to be there with him in that old garage, listening to the radio, to Hank and Elvis, Garth and Willie, After the Fire's Gone, Conway Twitty, Cash and Merle, Klein and Pearl, Loretta singing in my dreams. Close my eyes, honey, it's like I'm flying. And there's no one there at the Opry but you and me. Well, I got out of school and I hit the open road. And every record I loved taught me all I needed to know. Like be good, be kind, work hard, get a taste for whiskey. And remember where you're from to get where you wanna go. Some nights I play 200 people. Some nights, well, it's only just a few. I drive the van while the band is sleeping in the rear view. Turn on the radio and I always think of you. And Hank and Elvis, Garth and Willie, after the fire's gone, Conway Twitty, Catch and Merle, Klein and Pearl, Loretta singing in my dreams. I close my eyes, honey, it's like I'm flying. And there's no one there at the Opry but you and me. Well, it's been years now since I heard your voice. I felt the green grass in the yard behind your house. And I wish you were here, and I wish you could see me now. But some things take a lifetime to figure out. Some nights they say the venues are all sold out. Some nights, well, I'm playing on a TV show. But most nights, I swear, I just wanna be there with him. Picking guitar in that old garage to the radio. With Hank and Elvis, Garth and Willie, after the fire's gone, Conway Twitty, Cash and Merle, Klein and Pearl, Loretta singing in my dreams. And I close my eyes, honey, I'm flying. And there's no one here at the Opry but you and me. Oh, there's no one here at the Opry but you and me.
All right. Ooh, quivery voice. It struck me just hearing that now that how rare it is that every line of a song is true for me. My wife used to ask me a lot, you know, what's the song about and is it personal? And of course, they all are. I don't think you're going to get away with anything if you're trying to do good work and be honest, but they can't all be like everything I've experienced. Like, you know, a friend of mine that I write with all the time, she's always like, I can't write that. I wouldn't say it, you know, or I can't write that. I've not felt it. And that's always struck me as really weird. Like, we're storytellers. Like, I could write you 1,000 words. I could make up a story about Paris, even though I've never been there. That's songwriting. Maybe you can write 50 personal songs in your 20s and 30s, but you're going to run out of shit you've done and then feelings you've felt. And you eventually have, you know, you watch movies and read books and listen to other people. And, you know, that's where stories come from. And songs are just stories. Anyway, it's rare that every line is true. And that one, every line actually happened to me. So I felt like my grandfather would like it, you know, wherever he is. So moving right along. All right. I've bummed you all out. Let's go to a rocking song. I definitely don't know what this song is about, but it rocks. My friend Kevin, the dude who played drums on Japan. So once Japan happened, which was a total like fluke, like I just wrote it before I went to his house. I was like, holy shit, I'm going to have him play on my rock record. This is another song on the rock record that hasn't come out. And by the way, these are all just like rough. They're basically demos. As I said before, they're just in my studio. I know my way a little bit around mixing and sort of faux mastering it. But anyway, here's a rock song called Going Supernova, and it's sort of, it's pre-Lunar Satan. There's some space shit here. And I wanted to call the rock record Going Supernova. I just thought that was an interesting, evocative title. Let's check out Going Supernova. Going Supernova, make me a star in the sky. No clue what that means. It's wanting to be far away. Put me out there. Behind the goddamn sun where no one can find us. Burning out like a supernova, never looking back so they can say that they told us. Yeah, Dad! I do like that, the last verse. I bite my tongue, she's looking at me like we're on our own island at the end of the sea. She erases albums like she doesn't give a fuck that I'm going supernova on the sands of her beaches. Oh. How about, we got two more before we're out of here. This is a little delicate tune. So I write a lot with my friend Reed Barron. He's a great writer in town, good friend of mine, and a good bass player. And Reed is really great at like melody and tracks. And through our writing relationship, now what I'm really good at is top line, which is melody and lyrics. And so he booked a write with me. And when I got there, I didn't take a guitar. I didn't take anything. He usually has instruments laying around. But he just wanted me to basically write three choruses. He had like three tunes. He had titles. He had premises. He had premise. And he just wanted me to write the chorus. So we wrote the first one, and it was really good. And he's like, all right, cool, let's move on to the next song. And I was like, dude, let's just finish this one. And he's like, he immediately waved that off. Nope, not interested. I just need big, great choruses. So We wrote the second chorus, and I think it was good too. And I was just writing in this little journal. I didn't even take a computer. And the third song he played to me was a little nugget of what I'm about to play you. And all he had was this melody, and I think he had this first line, "Dandelion, my heart is broke when you are with me, I ain't lying." And I loved it. And I finished that verse, and then we wrote a chorus. And just like the previous two songs, he's like, "All right, you know, get out of here. Your work's done." And I said, "Hey, man, I'm taking this Dandelion song with me, and I'm just gonna finish it by myself. And you can do whatever you want with Dandelion. I'm definitely taking it home." And I did. I took it home, and I think I was trying to make it Beatlesy, but I've never really been able to do what the Beatles did ever. So in my own way, I took it somewhere. A friend of mine said it was kind of Fleetwood Mac-y. I don't think that's true either. It's just a dark little, but sweet little piece of poetry. So hope you enjoy it. Here's Dandelion.
Dandelion, my heart is broke when you are near me, I ain't lying. And if you're up and gone, when I wake you far away, then let me know if you're coming home. Don't leave me alone. Oh, I can't let you go. I got it bad for you. And I don't know what to do. You know it's true. You're my dandelion. Kiss me once. If you're flying back to Texas, and say you love me, and you're my little flower, and I'm your honeybee, and you got what I need, so give it to me.
Chaos at the end of that. When I originally recorded it, all those strings and all the timpani and shit was all real clean, and I ended up just putting a bunch of like reverb and like the weird like distortion plugins, and I just kind of fucked it up and made it feel more like a wound, which is a trick I definitely owe to Wilco. Those middle Wilco records taught me a lot about like deconstruction in music. Make a really pretty thing, and then you hear it back, and you're like, it's too good, or it's too, not, I don't mean good like it's a Beatles song, I mean good like, it's too clean, it's too, like, on the nose, and then you start introducing chaos, and it sort of starts to, like, really pop, at least for me. We got one more song. I'll leave you with a song I wrote for my wife. I don't often do that. We've been together a long time, and I do this for a living. There's not a lot of, like, me singing up into the window or holding the say anything Peter Gabriel in your eyes, the light, the heat. I see a doorway of 1,000 churches. You see a doorway of 1,000 churches? Good God. Put the goddamn acid down. Anyway, when we had our kid, we had kind of a rocky year with our kid. Our kid didn't sleep. And for those of you who have kids, you know how tough that can be. Our kid didn't really sleep for over a year. She didn't sleep through the night. And I was working a lot and traveling a lot. And, you know, just to be straight with you guys, we were having a tough time. And so I did want to reach out to her in one of the only ways I knew how. And I wrote her this song. It's for her and us. And it's a song about hope. It's called Give It Another Year. And the punchline of the song is, you know, like, let's hang in there. Like, let's give it one more year. Which, of course, I don't really mean one year. It's basically like, let's just keep duking it out. And there's some really touching lyrics in there, I think. The third verse says, it's true we're getting older, and it hurts to know the world moves on as if it's never known us. And we may be running out of time, and I know you think you've had enough, but I still see the girl I love. I still see our future. And, you know, when I'm feeling bummed and hopeless and stuck, I put this song on to remind myself that there's always another year if you're both willing to do it. And that applies really to anything. So for those of you out there who are struggling, I hope it's helpful for you. Thanks for listening to this real personal edition of Mill Up Your Podcast Radio. We're going to do all sorts of different formats. I actually thought today it'd be really fun to do one of my favorite soundtrack songs. And guess what the number one's going to be? Coming to Goddamn America. And these are just bonus episodes now. So if you don't like this, if this isn't your cup of tea, no problemo. Your weekly scheduled Metallica talk will be happening every Monday. We just wanted to dip into this because it's a way for you guys to learn more about Ethan and I and the music we make and the music we love. So thanks for those of you who've stayed on the ride. I hope you like the next tune. I'm gonna play it out with this one. What does it mean to play us out? If you guys have seen the Bill O'Reilly shit, fuck it, we'll do it live. I'm gonna leave you with Give It Another Year. I hope you dig it. If you do like Metal Up Your Podcast Radio, shoot us a tweet or an Instagram or metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. If you dig it, and let us know. And we'll, of course, see you every Monday. I'm actually flying to Germany this weekend, so hopefully we'll be able to do the gig while I'm in Europe. I'm sure Ethan will figure something out if we can't. But if I don't see you guys next Monday, I'll see you on the flip-flop, and I'll, of course, see you on the interwebs. So much love, peace and love to all you out there. Thanks so much. Here's Give It Another Year. Thank you.
getting older, and it hurts to know the world moves on as if it had never known us. We may be running out of time, and I know you think you've had enough, but I still see the girl I love. I still see our future. Just a mirror of my fear, and what we've got is beautiful, and I don't wanna lose it. So darling, let's give it another year. So darling, let's give us another year.